Hello, Hugh Grant fans. It's Diggory here. I'm just popping in before the podcast starts just to say thank you so much to everyone who got involved in our competition. We ran a competition asking you on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram to review us on Apple Podcasts for a chance to win a Taking You For Granted t-shirt. Georgia Teague, a big congratulations to her. She won the t-shirt and we sent it out to her, but plenty more of you also reviewed us on Apple Podcasts. So we'd like to say thank you to Hugh Said That, The Big Beach, Jay Waite, Vanman123, P. Garda, The Truth, NTHFG, Selwood AJ, Turtle Queen 99, Afcaso, 07 Hands, John 3 May, Trez Cool, Snibble Humph, Leanne, Quinn is 96, Iron Beowulf, Natalie Mills, Gabby Keary, Charlie Fish, Annie, and a big shout out to Mary Fran G. Thank you so much to everyone who got involved. Follow us on the channels, check us out in the future, and review us on Apple Podcasts if you haven't already. On with the show.
Listen, I did film and television studies at university for 3 years. I spent hours reading countless books and articles on subjects spanning from film all the way to television. Not a single one mentioned Hugh Grant once.
I achieved the hardest qualification across any university or college ever, a 2-1 in history. Let me tell you, the only thing that I learned was that we, as a society, have a history of denying and neglecting Hugh Grant's artistic and cultural relevance, not just in this country, but in the entire world.
I met Oscar at a Hugh Grant-themed event I put on at the Students' Union.
It felt as though Diggory and I were the only ones there. And we agreed that there was a Hugh Grant-shaped hole in academia.
We decided to put it right ourselves. We want to show people that he's an icon in acting.
We want to show people he's more than just a bumbling posh guy.
I'm Diggory Waite.
And I'm Oscar Beardmore Gray.
And this is...
Taking Hugh For Granted.
Hello, welcome to Taking Hugh For Granted, the show in which two friends watch every single film starring Hugh Grant in the attempt to answer the simple question, is this film, Taking Hugh For Granted, is this film good on its own, or does it rely on the bumbling Brit for its acclaim? This week is a slightly special week. I'm joined, as ever, by Oscar Beardmore Gray, but this week, he's an award-winning journalist. Oscar, how the bloody hell are you doing, mate?
Oh, mate, that's very kind to give me a big shout-out. I'm very, very well, yeah. How are you?
I'm good. We'll tell the listeners what the award you've won and what you've won it for, and we can maybe tell them to give it a Google.
Oh, okay. Well, that's very kind. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the sort of whole award thing, because I think it's just a chance for journalists in particular.
You're so modest. You're just like you.
I know, exactly. But, you know, the sort of merry-go-round of people self-congratulating themselves on Twitter is not a thing I'm a fan of. But the project I did last year while doing my master's has won a couple of multimedia awards in Canada and been nominated for a couple of others. So it's very nice to have some recognition. But yeah, so the fish you don't know you eat. Maybe give it a Google.
Give it a Google.
Give it a Google. Go on. Give it a Google. Please. Give it a Google. Do it. Give it a Google. Thank you.
So this week we're talking about Impromptu. It came out in 1991. How did you watch this film, Oscar? Was there in particular, did you watch it in the afternoon, in the morning? What mood were you in?
So normally I watch the film all in one, but this time I actually watched a little bit in bed, an hour in bed, and then nice. Woke up and watched half an hour over breakfast, which actually was a nice way of doing it. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a huge period piece fan myself, but I enjoyed this one. How did you watch it?
Well, as ever, I watch it on the day that we record. So I watched it this morning. Did you know anything about the film really going into it?
Nothing really, apart from what we'd heard from our mega fan, Mary.
I was thinking of one today, Impromptu. I think that's a fantastic movie, and I think not enough people know about that film.
So there was a lot of expectation for me coming into this one. I was really excited to find out what all the crack was about it.
Yeah, exactly, what we had in store. If you haven't heard our interview with our superfan Mary, check out the Hunger Games episode 10 of the podcast. Well, I mean, without further ado then, let's get into this one. Take it away, synopsis Simon.
Haynes.
Impromptu, directed by James Lapine and released in 1991. In 1830s France, Georges Sand, played by Judy Davis, is known as an eccentric man-eater traversing the world without a care for societal norms, and leaving a trail of adoring men in her wake. However, when she meets pianist and composer Frédéric Chopin, played by Hugh Grant, George Sand is overcome. Chopin must be hers.
Right, impromptu. As ever, Oscar, let's start where it really matters. Let's talk about the main man himself, Hugh Grant. What did you think about Hugh Grant when you first saw him in this film?
Oh, Diggory. Listen, anything before 1994, which was Four Weddings and a Funeral, is just a time capsule. It's absolutely brilliant. Hugh Grant has got the most hilarious sort of wig mane haircut and what is, can only be described as one of the more bizarre accents you've heard. Almost more bizarre perhaps in another film that he stars in called The Bengali Night. But what were your initial thoughts, Diggs?
Oh dear, oh dear. I mean, so he plays Frédéric Chopin, although I mean, who I believe is Polish.
He is Polish, but spent most of his time in France.
Right, but that doesn't explain why Hugh Grant does an Italian accent. I mean, he sounds like Gino De Campo. People know him from the video on YouTube where he goes, "If my grandmother had wheels, she would have been a bike."
That's absolutely spot on. Like I couldn't place where his accent was from.
Yeah, Polish. I watched a couple of videos on it afterwards. How to do a Polish accent? It's not, you know, people think it's stereotypical Russian. It's not. But, you know, obviously it's tinged of that. But this, you know, look, I'm doing a bad Eastern European accent, yes? This is sort of Ukraine sort of area, yes? Probably a bit racist, whatever, right? That is what you should... I'm not an actor, but that's what you should maybe be going for. However, you had this. You had this from... he said, "What are you doing? Get out of my chambers. I am Chopin. I'm meant to be playing a piano, see?" Like, what is going... I don't know what is going on with it.
"So the Countess d'Agoult is making advances to you?"
"She is my friend's mistress. She has borne his child."
"I don't think he'd mind if she changed hands."
"Really, I don't understand the attitude of you people. Are we at a livestock sale? She's a woman, not a goat."
"Are you in love with her yourself?"
"Of course not.
I'm not full of virtues and noble qualities. I love, that is all. But I love strongly, exclusively, steadfastly."
"No, it's like something out of a novel, like that dreadful woman writes, if you can call her a woman."
"George?"
But, you know, you say that, but at the same time, I didn't find the accent too distracting. I didn't think it was bad enough to warrant turning the film off, for example. Or
no.
Admittedly, when the first words came out of his mouth, I was in absolute stitches.
Yeah. Because I wasn't expecting it, because not many people and other people in the film are doing accents. It's just him and his mate Litz or Fritz or whatever he's called.
I mean, maybe we should a quick word for his hair as well, because this is a unique hairstyle, I think, in Hugh's career.
I read one review which put it well. It's like, it's the wavy... the conditioned wavy Hugh Grant locks that you know, but clearly pre Four Weddings and a Funeral. It's way longer and way more period, and he said himself, he was like, you know, everyone had to wear these hair pieces for the film. When we sat around in between takes, we looked like a bunch of 12-year-old schoolgirls who'd got together like at brownies or something. And he's not wrong. It's not a great haircut, I have to say. Unless you have a thing for period, period pieces, I mean. That's a different thing. Fetish. If you have a thing for period pieces, you're going to love this hairpiece. But otherwise, it leaves a lot to be desired.
It is a wig, right?
I don't know, actually. I definitely... There's some characters in there who had wigs on. And it was quite... like the guy that pursues George Sand, the female lead in this film, loads. And he clearly... It was a bit off-putting for me. It was quite clear he was wearing a headpiece the whole time. It didn't fit his head or his face, at least to me. But Hugh Grant's hair looked a bit more natural, actually. But maybe it was a hairpiece.
I don't know, because you could kind of imagine Hugh Grant in his early 20s, you know, really being able to grow his hair out, maybe go on a backpacking trip around Southeast Asia with a...
yeah,
with a top knot of the day.
Exactly.
That was maybe the style, the mullet haircut.
And what would have been when he got the guitar out round the fireplace? I mean, obviously, they didn't have Wonderwall at this point. So what the hell would he have sung? I wonder what his version would have been.
Impromptu.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I think you're right.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I think you're right, Oscar.
Maybe I don't know whether we should talk a bit about like kind of the history around this story.
I would love you to enlighten me, so please do. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Frédéric Chopin, for those who are not well educated, I shouldn't say not well educated.
You bastard.
I'm not a classical musician myself, or a classical musician historian, or should I say romantic, because he was of course a great star of the romantic period. But I believe Frédéric Chopin, you know, grew up in Poland and then went to Paris, lived in Paris for many years, but was always very ill and frail and only did a very small number of public appearances. And he was known as a sort of celebrity. He was one of the first celebrities of his time. The Romantic era was one of this first eras where like celebrity was kind of a bit of part of the culture. And Chopin's love life was quite scrutinized, and he had this sort of affair relationship with this character called George Sands, which was quite famous. And George Sands was notorious for dressing up as a man to fit in with society. At the time, in society, you were only allowed to dress as a man, so wear trousers, etc., if you had a permit. And George Sands didn't have a permit. She kind of just did her own thing, broke the rules, as we saw in this movie, and somehow seduces Frédéric Chopin.
You had to have a fucking permit to dress as a bloke.
Yeah, apparently so.
If you're a woman, I imagine.
If you're a woman, yeah.
That is bananas.
I know.
That's crazy. Imagine that. I bet men could dress as women without a permit.
Probably.
Bloody bastards.
So anyway, I'm sorry. I probably bored you. I'm just a bit of a history boff.
Oh. I think I dozed off there. I do apologise, Oscar. What did you say?
Look over there. Hugh Grant's in a prep. Look over there. He's holding a baguette.
At the heart of this film is George Sand, who was played by Judy Davis, who is basically this eccentric author. And I put eccentric in inverted commas because it seems like she wears men's clothing and doesn't conform to being a lady like everyone else does. And that scene is crazy and out there. And I suppose in those days it was. Whereas now she seems like, you know, badass bitch, and it's great. So what did you think about her character and Judy's performance?
I thought it was excellent. I really warmed to her throughout the film. And we talk a lot about on this podcast about characters that we root for throughout a film, which really take the film along with us. And yeah, I really, really enjoyed her acting, and I thought her character, there was a lot to hang on to, a lot to get behind. You know, she's very flamboyant, very compelling. And yeah, I thought Judy Davis, who I don't know a lot about, I admit, but looking and doing a bit of research, she was a reasonably high profile actor of the sort of 1980s, 1990s. She was nominated for a couple of Oscars in her time. Mm. And this was one of her kind of early roles, I think. But she really brought the character to life, and I like the way she kind of like bossed everyone around and didn't take any shit from anyone.
The one thing I would say about her character though is the film is basically led in a great part because George fancies Chopin. She's known for getting about a bit, having lots of relationships that will always end with the man still deeply in love with her, but she's just over it. And finally, it seems like maybe Chopin would be the one to change that. And she's deeply, deeply in love with him. And that's what sort of drives the story along. She's sort of found this person. Mm. And for once, she's into Chopin or she's into a bloke and the bloke isn't into her. That drives the story along. And annoyingly, it takes about half an hour for them to meet. So the story at first, just making a point about the whole film, I had to say, I was slightly... took a little bit of time for me to like fully get into it.
I completely agree. Like, I think this is a sort of a point that often happens in sort of the Downton Abbey type Sense and Sensibility, Jane Austen kind of films, that they often have to have their drawn out scenes of people in carriages and big mansions. Okay, another one for the Hugh Grant drinking game. We see lots of big houses in this film. But yeah, it does take a little bit of time to get into. And we sort of land on that first scene where they come together, where George
climbs across a couple of balconies and goes in through Chopin's window. Chopin doesn't realize he's there playing his piano, la 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 la. And then he stops playing for a second, and George pops out in front of the piano and is like, "Oh God, play more." And understandably, Hugh Grant, Chopin, is like,
"Get out of my house.
Yeah, yeah. You are in my private chambers, get out."
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah! Oh, don't stop! Monsieur Chopin, you are in the middle of a miracle. I'm not quite yet cured.
How did you get in here? Who are you?
I am your slave. And you have summoned me with your music.
Oh, yes. I think I know who you are. I have heard you described. Madame Sand, rumor has it you are a woman, and so I must ask you to leave my private chambers.
Have I offended your modesty? I apologize. Only play me one more piece and I'll go.
No, this is ridiculously improper and frightening as well. Please leave now.
She's constantly trying it on with him, and I never got the sense that he was sort of saying no, but secretly he wanted to. And I don't know whether that's down to his acting or whether that's down to the writing or what that, or just the tone of the film, but it never felt like he actually was into it. And so when eventually he does turn around and goes, yeah, okay, I do like you, it does feel slightly,
that's true, but I completely get what you mean. But I think the whole point is that his whole character is that he's like this weak, feeble, vulnerable human who he's coughing the whole time. Yeah. He's not very, despite his enormous talent, quite clearly on the piano, that's the only place he feels comfortable, really. He's not very sociable. So I think, I don't want to criticize Hugh here, because I think that's more the writing of his character, who's this like withdrawn character who doesn't really show many of his feelings. It doesn't feel comfortable expressing things. And is very much juxtaposed with George Sands, who's this very flamboyant, all over the place character who's sort of like shouting all the time.
And she's very emotional, wears her heart on her sleeve. What she feels, she does. I actually really like that reading of it, in that he doesn't feel comfortable unless he's on the piano. Because you're right, the most animated he looks is probably at the beginning when he's playing the piano with Litz and they're having a great time. And from then on, he does look awkward in every situation. It's actually quite similar to Bitter Moon, in which he's constantly going, you know, all the references, sexual references during that, Hugh's character's going, "Oh, bloody hell, steady on." And in this film, it's almost like George keeps hitting on him, and he keeps going, "Oh, for God's sake." But
in the this voice, "Oh, for God's sake, get out of my room. You're a man, you're a woman, get out."
Which this film is littered with as well.
Well, you're listening to Hugh Grant taking Hugh for granted on the radio.
Emma Thompson in this film is an absolute delight. So Emma Thompson invites all these notable people to her house, including George Sand and including Chopin. And two of the gentlemen that have arrived, one of them has duelled the other one to the death because he fancies George, wants to kill this guy. Emma Thompson goes, this is so symptomatic of her character, just goes to her husband, "Are you going to wake up for the duel tomorrow? I just don't think I'm going to be around for that. Just let me know what happens with the duel tomorrow." And it's like, she's just such a crazy character. It's just the idea that there's going to be literally a fight to the death in your front door, and you're like, "Yeah, I don't know about it."
Yeah, you invited two random people to your house, and then you're just like, "Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to get up, to be honest. Might just sleep in."
Exactly. So the duel. Hugh Grant, Chopin, has been asked to duel one of George's ex-lovers. It's not looking good for Chopin. I mean, as we said, the guy's coughing all the time. He's a fragile wreck anyway. They take 10 paces apart, and before he even gets to his 10 paces...
"Are you ready, gentlemen? And one, two, three, four, five, six... Seven, eight, nine, ten.
Where are you going? This man has fainted.
But that man is wounded.
Too bad. Come, help us lift him.
Hugh completely faints on the ground, and he has to be helped by George to be picked up, and he sort of completely forgets where he is. And what's a bit crazy is that actually George then picks up Hugh's gun and shoots her own ex-lover in the chest, and then yeah. It's like, doctor, come over here, and the doctor obviously runs to the guy who's just been shot, and then she's like, not him, this guy.
Yeah.
And then he runs over to Chopin, who's clearly just like fainted because he hasn't had enough water or something.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't like going outside.
And then we sort of cut to the scene of him waking up, and he's like, what happened? I can't remember.
Yeah. I mean, it was an important moment in the film, because I think that's when, you know, their love starts to maybe blossom. Because he doesn't ever say at this point, doesn't even really show that he's into her, but this duel, he accepts it, even though he doesn't have to. He accepts the duel and is willing, I suppose, to die for it. So it's a nice show there. And obviously she then flings herself on his body and takes the gun and shoots her ex-lover. So that's how into him she is.
Yeah, and especially as obviously Chopin has never, the only thing he's touched is a keyboard, let alone not a gun.
Yeah, exactly. And it seems like he could die with a change of the wind, let alone a fucking bullet.
This is ridiculously improper.
A frightening well.
She's a woman, not a goat. Please leave now.
But yeah, so as the film moves on, I mean, much of the film is centered on the fact that Liszt, Chopin's great rival's mistress, who is called Marie de Gaulle, she is actually secretly in love with Chopin and is trying to sabotage George Sand's attempts to win over Hugh. So we see at one point George gives a letter of love that's meant to be for Chopin, and Marie takes the letter, rips half of it off, and writes her own name. So Chopin believes that Marie is actually secretly in love with him.
Hugh is and Chopin is of the understanding that George Sand wants to get with him for his money and for a bet. Meanwhile, this Marie, Liszt's partner or mistress, she actually loves Chopin. So that's where he's at right now. And then eventually, as you say,
George Sand walks into the room and Chopin's playing, and she's like, I love you. Don't you see I love you? And he's just like,
why don't you take this? Then you can call off the bet.
What bet?
I know you have sworn to seduce me, and this rate you will succeed. So
that's
just take the money
lie.
And go.
Who told you that? Marie de Gaulle.
Yeah, she's a good friend. I have no reason to doubt her.
All right, once I wrote you a letter and asked her to deliver it, I found out that she signed her own name to it. Surely you realize she wants you for herself.
Dear lady, please.
Don't worry, I'm going. She's right, we're not suited. I'm not full of virtues and noble qualities. I love, that is all. But I love strongly, exclusively, steadfastly.
And that's the line where Hugh realizes, and Chopin realizes, oh, Marie didn't send this letter to me. It was actually George Sand. And that's the moment in the film where things start to click, and it's the nice moment where things come together. Because the film, I think, was nice, because I was a bit worried when it was a period piece, and I was a bit, don't know if I'm the biggest fan of them, because they're all a bit serious. But this film is really quite bizarre and quite funny and doesn't take itself very seriously. And this scene, whilst it's nice in their personal character development, it doesn't have that same level of self-awareness and self-deprecation that the rest of the film does. So as much as this scene is good for obviously the story and it makes sense and it's that sort of like denouement and they're coming together and sort of the end of the film, I did feel that like this is one of those scenes where I was like, this is a bit out of keeping with all of the with the bits of the film that I liked more, which were the funny bits.
Well, I got a really nice review actually that I found, which I think sums up the film really nicely. To your point that the reason I think I liked the film was because it wasn't taking itself too seriously, which a lot of those similar films can do. So this was from Angel of Music Forever. It says,
amazing.
Delightfully charming movie. Impromptu is one of the more charming, lighthearted period movies I've come across. If you're expecting a sweeping drama, prepare to be disappointed. Some people might not like this film, as it lacks some of the lengthy, tragic dialogue and overly melodramatic style that many period pieces have. If you're looking for something fun for the whole family, this is it. Judy Davis's role as George Sorn is strong and she delivers her character with the perfect amount of gusto. Hugh Grant's performance as Frédéric Chopin is priceless, bang on, and he makes very endearing and believable as a timid composer, which I thought was absolutely summed up the film perfectly for me.
Taking you for granted, granted. Taking you for granted, granted. Taking you for granted, granted. What did you think, lads? Were they taking you for granted?
Impromptu. Are we taking you for granted?
It feels, you know, in my head, it feels like it's been a while since I said this. Who knows? It might be last week that I said this, but I think we are taking you for granted in this film. I think what I like about this film, like I said before, is it's a period piece that doesn't take itself too seriously. I mean, it has this wonderful subplot in there where there are these children running around reenacting the French Revolution, and they're like tying each other up and stuff and trying to kill each other. And they go on the hunt for gunpowder, and it all culminates in they blow up the fireplace. And it's something straight out of a Wes Anderson film. It's so bizarre and weird, and it's so charming and sweet. So that sort of stuff in the film I really liked. However, Hugh, I wasn't totally convinced by your performance in this film. So for me, I do have to say that this film is taking you for granted. I wasn't the biggest fan. And I'm very sorry to Mary out there as well. What did you think, Oscar?
It's a really tough one, Diggs. This is one that's really got me, yeah. My mind's telling me no, but my heart's telling me yes kind of thing. I don't know what I just said. It could be one of the two. But anyway, sorry.
Yeah.
My heart is telling me one thing. My mind is telling me another thing is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
I am going to say this film is taking Hugh for granted for a couple of reasons. Yesterday, I was watching the last episode of Modern Family, which is a show I've got into recently. In that episode, there was a mention about Hugh Grant, which really tickled me, where there was a bit of a love scene, and one of the characters was like, you know, said something about Hugh Grant, and she was like, I was thinking full rom-com. And that is where this film doesn't get me, because this is not, we don't really get any of that sort of classic lovey-dovey stuff that really like makes me really want to love Hugh's character. It's all a bit like wooden and he's just, Chopin is not a particularly endearing character. And again, that might not be Hugh's fault. That might be the character's writing's fault. And so for me, despite the fact that I actually enjoyed the film more than I was expecting. I was expecting not to like the film when it started. And the first half an hour, I was thinking, Christ, I might snap this one off or put it in double time.
Yeah.
So overall, the film I enjoyed, but I think Hugh's character was slightly lacking in places. So I'm with you, and I'm going to have to say, sorry, Mary. We are taking Hugh for granted.
Well, I mean, I suppose it's ending on a somewhat somber note this episode. So hopefully we're back to some Hugh Grant. But this is what it's all about. This is why we're doing this. You know, forensic investigations into each of these films, picking out which ones are good, which ones are bad. And if you disagree with us, please let us know. Tweet us, Insta us, email us in. We want to hear everything that you have to say about this film. You are just the best. Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks, everyone. And see you next time on Taking Hugh Grant. For copyright reasons, the producers of Taking Hugh for Granted would like to state that this podcast is in no way associated with the actor Hugh John Mungo Grant, nor does it endorse his views or represent him in any way. We simply review Mr. Grant's films and hope to shine light upon some of the lesser-known classics from his illustrious career. Hugh, if you're listening, we hope you approve.